Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on the road. We are completing the last of the documentaries in this complete series, and this involves the planet. And what is the likely outcome if we do little, nothing, even a great deal? And I'll be completing this in the next 2 months. I look forward to having a world premiere in the late spring, early summer. When I come back, we'll probably do it as a benefit to our sister station, WBAI, which I've done for the last 40 years, and to help them with their finances. It's a powerful film. It doesn't blink. It tells the truth and shows you some of the most dramatic film footage you've ever seen anywhere. So, wrapping it up over the next 2 months. Today, the latest on how our bodies may cure themselves of diabetes in the future, an interesting study from the University of Bergen in Norway, and a lot more on health and healing. Always state-of-the-art, always some peer-reviewed journals, always some respected institutions. And why? It's not necessary to do that, but I choose to do that because for those of you who have been told, oh, the health and nutrition, there's nothing to that. Yeah, there is. We have over 1 million studies in the peer-reviewed literature, including the Library of Medicine articles on our side. They don't have anything on their side to prove that eating meat is healthy and will help your heart. The more bacon you eat, the longer your heart will exist. No, they don't. So ask yourself this, and this is a question I'm going to open our call lines to. If virtually all of the science, when I say all of the science, I mean all of the legitimate independent science, shows that our lifestyles are more important than any genetic predisposition, and you can even change genetic predisposition, as long as you're willing to make those changes, there's no reason that whatever they claim would be the genetic outcome doesn't have to be at all. But we could live at least 15 years longer. And we are the least healthy of all the developed nations. We're dead last. So on the one hand, you have a magnificent, absolutely perfect public relations campaign going on telling us that we're the best fed, we had the most doctors, hospital, nurses, technology, scientific insights into the human body, the genome. So don't worry, be happy. And we trust that, going against our own intuition and common sense and reason. And then one day we have a heart attack. And coming here today, I had a channel on. The only one I could get was the Glenn Beck Show. Now, normally I wouldn't be listening, but something caught my attention. One of his long-term colleagues on the air, I don't know if the guy's a producer or host, I don't know, but a long-term person had just had a heart attack in the last week. And they were praying for him and talking about what a relief it was that he had survived it. But then they got into him being morbidly obese and smoking and eating all the wrong foods. And they were joking about the fact that his doctor had suggested some supplements. Oh, you mean like rhino horn powder? The guy said, no, that's an endangered species. No, I'm talking about vitamins. This is a very large audience. So does that mean that his audience is predetermined to reject the idea of a lifestyle change? Now, Glenn Beck, to his own acknowledgement, is morbidly obese. And many of the people in his life, we are led to believe, are the same. But now, maybe he will do something. So, on the one hand, we're told that a healthy lifestyle is all it's foolish. why take yourself away from things that you feel comfort in, your foods you grew up with, pizzas and hot dogs and hamburgers and salami and colas and alcohol and a sedentary lifestyle, your video games and your, you know, and all of the social networking. That's what's important. And then you end up with a heart attack. And what about all the people that same age? I don't know how old the man was. I'm guessing he's in his 50s. But think of all the 50-year-olds who, when they were 50, they were setting world records, like Sid Howard, arguably one of the greatest athletes in world history. And I've known Sid. He's been a friend for a long time. I remember it was July 4th, 1975, when he came to a meeting of my radio audience on WMCA in Brooklyn. And it was on the boardwalk, and I know how many people were there because I had wanted to get 50 T-shirts, just something to give to the people as a gift. And my producer at the time, Adria Eisenmeyer, who was my producer, I guess, for about 14 years, she said, "That's too little. What if more people come?" So I said, "Okay, increase it." And what I didn't know that somehow there was a miscommunication in 5,000. And when I got the bill, I thought, oh, wow, that's a lot of money. And what am I going to do with all these T-shirts? Well, we ran out of T-shirts. Over 6,000 people showed up for that meeting on the boardwalk to get healthy. One of them was Sid Howard. And Sid trained with us, part of the Natural Living Room Running and Walking Club. Later, Peter Roth would join in as one of the coaches, and Howard Robbins joined in as one of the coaches, and Dolores Perry. We've had, even to this day, Dolores Perry is still there, and John Q for the last 20 years. So we've been one of New York's leading running and walking clubs, and it's free. We meet every Sunday at 9 o'clock in Fifth Avenue in Central Park. And we've had over 30,000 of our people finish the New York City Marathon. In fact, every single person who started the marathon finished it. But we do it more holistically. Diet's very important, supplement, understanding biochemistry. We actually have classes to show people that training long distance is immunocompromising, and it hurts your immune system unless you compensate. In any case, Sid never stopped that lifestyle. Today, he is still, I don't know how old he is today. I think he's around 80, more or less. And then Sam Skinner, Louise Nottage, who passed, but she was hit in a car accident. She was the greatest senior athlete on the planet in history. She'd go to the Senior Olympics, enter 10 competitions, win a gold medal in all 10. That's how good she was. Queenie Thompson, Thelma Wilson. Thelma's phenomenal. One of the nicest people you'd ever meet. These are legends in track and field. Legends. And today, they don't have arthritis, high blood pressure, diabetes. They don't have fatigue, incontinent. They're not filled with dementia or Alzheimer's. They don't have cataracts and glaucoma, macular degeneration. They're vitally healthy. I'm guessing that most of them now are in their 80s or 70s. Still competing. Sam Skinner still competing. You would never recognize him by his age. You'd never. He looks 40. And I'm guessing he's in his late 70s. He and I did the Jamaica Marathon together. And that was a challenging marathon. They had never done a marathon before. And there were thousands from around the world who went. And we took a contingent from the Running and Walking Club down there. We had gone to the London Marathon, and we'd go all over the world to marathons, and sometimes there'd be as many as 60 of us. If you ever saw the movie Chariots of Fire, where they're all running together, well, in the morning at 5 o'clock, there'd be 60 of us running around, twice around Hyde Park, beautiful park, by the way. And that's what it looked like. That's what it felt like. It was just a wonderful experience to travel with people and be the first. We did the first L.A. Marathon, the first San Francisco Marathon, the first Waterfront, Montreal, Long Island, Philadelphia, the Marine Corps Marathon, the London Marathon. We did all these first, the Waterfront Marathon, the Jersey Shore Marathon, and we had some great times. But the point is, those people who stuck with that, Frank Gallo, out Long Island, today, they are not their chronological age. They are a biological age, and it's probably half of all their peers at the biological level. So for the idea that can we reverse the aging process, the answer is yes. Can we live a longer life at least by 15 years? Is it too late? Unless you're dead, it's never too late. You can always make improvements. So why is it then that with all this empirical evidence and with all this scientific evidence, with over 1,000 studies on resveratrol and the Mediterranean diet and L-carnosine and NAD and L-carnitine and vitamin E and tocotrienols and vitamin C and quercetin, all these supplements, all these unique foods like spirulina and chlorella, with the meditation and mindful meditation and yoga and exercise and good diet, why is it that all this is 100% proven to benefit it, and yet it's not embraced by orthodox medicine, it's not embraced by orthodox science, it's not embraced by any official agency, it's not embraced in schools, it's not embraced in colleges, it's not embraced in lifestyles by at least 90% of the American population? It's given no credit at all. In fact, you'll hear people talking about the heart attack they had, the stroke they had, and now they're going to change something. They are absolutely not going to eat pizza every day. They'll eat it 5 days a week, maybe six, but not the seventh day. And they will drink a 3,000-liter gallon of Coca-Cola only every 2 hours, not as before. The absurdity of this is virtually at this point, it is pathological. That we do everything in the world wrong, and we wonder why we're a victim. Let me think. Could it be that? And then fill in the blank. So you have an opportunity to call in throughout our program today on this single issue and share your points of view of why is it that when there's so many models of how to do something right, we choose to do the opposite. What's your opinion? I'd like to hear from you, because nothing's changing. The people who have been changing are the ones continuing to change, and only through crisis or through a proper parenting are younger people taking the example of healthy, choiced parents and continuing that on. Not all, but a lot. So the interesting part, and mind you, I sat at this epicenter of this, because I get the calls in my office every single day. My kid has this, my mom has that, can you help us with this? So it's not as if I'm an outsider looking into a paradigm, trying to figure it out. I've been at the epicenter of this health paradigm and the environmental paradigm and the conservation of nature paradigm and the protection of animal paradigm and the independent and applied and basic science paradigm for over 50 years, half a century. So it gives me a perspective, but I'd like to hear yours today. I'd like to hear why we're not changing, why we mock people who make good choices, why we feel resentful for other people's successes, why we refuse to give up bad habits, why we use the past, our dramas, our traumas, from the past as an excuse of why we choose not to make a good choice today. And then a cottage industry supporting those wrong choices grows up around it. And legions of people who go, me too. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888 is our talkback number. Also, I'm going to play several clips today. And when I go to my first break and come back, I'm going to have a Dr. Sharon Goldberg. Now, Sharon Goldberg is not an alternative doctor. She's not into complementing holistic anything. She's just a regular board-certified physician. But she decided to testify against SB 637, and then there were two people testifying back-to-back. I want you to hear what she's saying, because the media is giving no attention, zero attention to this technology, and we're going to give a lot to it. Also, only one legislator, I'm sure there'll be others, but one has had the courage to come forward and challenge the Congress that, are we going to keep our allegiance to Saudi Arabia and continue the war in Yemen, which is a humanitarian disaster? And then, to show you the L.A. that you never saw in the past, the other side of Los Angeles, Skid Row. This is an important one. I'll fill in the visual so you know what you're seeing, or not seeing, but hearing. And if time permits, a debate between Jordan Peterson, Professor Jordan Peterson, and a BBC reporter and feminist. This is an interesting discussion. And I'm going to do something a little different. During this, when I hear either one make a statement I feel is important, and I will stop and give you a life example of how that's happening every day, and we're just not paying attention to it. So we have a lot to share today. And we begin with the University of Bergen, which is in Norway. It's about diabetes. Now, we know that diabetes is caused at the physical level by damaged or non-existing insulin cells' inability to produce insulin. And that's the hormone that's necessary to regulate blood sugar levels. Many diabetes patients take insulin supplements to regulate these levels. But that leads to obesity and fatigue and compromises our immune system. So what they found is that they discovered that glucagon-producing cells in the pancreas can change identity and adapt so that they can do the job for their neighboring damaged or missing insulin cells. You see, when your insulin goes up too high, glucagon comes down and pushes it back down again, so the body has its own mediating balancing factor. Quote, "We are possibly facing the start of a totally new form of treatment for diabetes where the body can produce its own insulin with some startup help." Now, here's the question. Can cells change identity? The researcher discovered that only about 2% of the neighboring cells in the pancreas could change identity. However, even that amount makes the researchers optimistic about potential new treatment approaches. So for the first time in history, researchers were able to describe the mechanisms behind the process of cell identity. And it turns out that this is not a passive process, but it's a result of signals from their surrounding cells, hence the EPA, the surrounding environment. So that's important. So whole new approach to diabetes coming at you. And of course, a healthy lifestyle will prevent diabetes or reverse diabetes in most cases. From Australia, the Murdoch University study reveals anxiety and the risk of depression are altered by consuming curcumin. Cure, C-U-R, cumin, C-M-I-N. So recent statistics from the CDC, one out of every six adults will have depression at some time in their life. And of course, anxiety disorders are out of control within our society as well. But most people have no fear. They're always looking for something that will reduce their anxiety or depression. But can they do this without the toxic medications that often make matters even worse, including creating suicidal tendencies? So the solution, according to the researchers in Perth, Australia, supports the ability of curcumin, that's the active principle in turmeric, to treat depressive symptoms and anxiety. And why would we even suspect this would be the right research? Well, because historically curcumin has been used for centuries in Ayurvedic and traditional Chinese healing systems to treat conditions like arthritis and asthma and allergies and hepatitis. But now, there's plenty of evidence that our mood can be elevated with the use of this natural substance. In a double-blind, placebo-controlled study published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Affective Disorders, the participants with major depressive disorders were given either placebo or low dose of curcumin, or a high dose of curcumin, or a combination of saffron and curcumin for 12 weeks, 3 months. The researchers found that the curcumin extracts were effective in reducing depression and anxiety. And that's a big, big factor. And they were using 500 milligrams twice a day. I would have used 2,000 milligrams three times a day. And I've had spectacular results working with people with depression and anxiety. In fact, I did a health support group over a three-month period just on depression and anxiety, and we were able to have a 92% success rate. And that was important. And it also is significantly anti-inflammatory. And we know that the more inflammation in your brain, the more you're going to have that contribute to mood disorders. Specifically, curcumin combats inflammation by decreasing the expression of inflammatory cytokines, cyto, C-Y-T-O, kines, K-I-N-E-S, including interleukin and tumor necrosis factor alpha. It also decreases levels of cortisol, CORT, C-O-R-T, I-S-O-L, I-S-O-L, and that's known as your stress hormone while protecting against oxidative damage. And curcumin may even have the potential to ease disturbances in the HPA, which is the hypothalamopituitary adrenal axis. And dysfunction in that axis can adversely affect mood. And early research has also contributed to the body of evidence showing that curcumin targets depression. In a separate double-blind placebo-controlled study in 2015 published in the Journal of Clinical Psychopharmacology, researchers found that supplementation with 2,000 milligrams a day of curcumin enhanced the effectiveness of pharmacological antidepressants without causing adverse effects. So curcumin is a good thing. Also, from Montana State University, they found that gut microbiome, that's the good bacteria, can protect you against acute arsenic toxicity. And that is a big deal because about 200 million people a year are exposed to arsenic through contaminated drinking water. So this was published in Nature Communications, the peer-reviewed journal, and it showed that the healthier the bacteria in the gut, the less likely we're to have the effects of the toxicity. And also finally from the North American Menopause Society, published in the peer-reviewed journal Menopause, DHEA, that's the mother hormone in the body, improves vaginal discomfort after menopause. And this was a phase 3 trial with positive results to take intravaginal DHEA a step closer to government approval, and it's to help with the balance of intravaginal estrogen that a person's not taking that would be produced naturally with one that does the same thing but with none of the harmful effects. And by the way, without hormonal treatment of some form, after menopause, vaginal tissues atrophy, and the lining thins and secretes less and less fluid, and the pH becomes more alkaline, which leads to discomfort with sex, painful, and frequently ends up with vaginal infections and urinary problems for many women. In fact, 84% of women in this clinical trial had moderate to severe vaginal dryness. So, DHEA made the difference. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest in health and healing. We are 24 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back to this scientist, this physician, talking about something that we do not hear anyone in the mainstream media discussing.
Pretty face got the best of me. Set it- internal medicine physician. I've practiced medicine for 21 years, and my background is mostly academic internal medicine, hospital-based, clinical research, and medical education. I am going to skip many of the things I wanted to say because I didn't realize it was only 5 minutes. Wireless radiation has biological effects, period. This is no longer a subject for debate when you look at PubMed and the peer-reviewed literature. These effects are seen in all life forms, plants, animals, insects, microbes. In humans, we have clear evidence of cancer now. There is no question. We have evidence of DNA damage, cardiomyopathy, which is the precursor of congestive heart failure, neuropsychiatric effects. So 5G is not a conversation about whether or not these biological effects exist. They clearly do. 5G is a conversation about unsustainable healthcare expenditures. Why do I say this? We've been sitting on the evidence for EMR and chronic disease for decades. And now we are seeing all these epidemics appearing. So diabetes is the first epidemic. I think most of you know the statistics. They're very scary. 1 in 3 American children will become diabetic in their lifetime, and if they're Hispanic females, the number is 1 in 2. Okay. So what does this have to do with wireless radiation? Wireless radiation and other electromagnetic fields, such as magnetic fields and dirty electricity, have been clearly associated with elevated blood sugar and diabetes. That is what the peer-reviewed literature says. It is not opinion. The closer you live to a cell tower, the higher your blood glucose. That is based on hemoglobin A1C measurements. So the idea with small cells of putting the cells closer to people's homes and bedrooms scientifically is very dangerous. And from an economic perspective, it's dangerous. And you may not know this. I was shocked to find this out. But the way you create a model of diabetes in rats in the lab is by exposing them to 2.4 gigahertz. And this is not for long-term exposure. So I don't have time to talk about the costs, but the huge problem with diabetes really is chronic kidney disease. End-stage renal disease, the worst complication of diabetes, leads to hemodialysis. Hemodialysis is an automatic qualification for Medicare. And if you don't qualify for Medicare, we still have to dialyze the patient. And the state ends up paying in many different instances. So renal failure is 1% of Medicare, but it takes up 7% of all Medicare expenditures. I don't have time to talk about this anymore, but once again, the other epidemics that clearly link from the science with electromagnetic radiation are related to mental health. And this is straight from PubMed. This isn't my opinion. This is science.
Dr. Goldberg, for those of us who aren't physicians, what is PubMed?
I'm sorry. It's just it's our National Library of Medicine. This is where you would go. This is just the peer-reviewed literature. So we have three epidemics that clearly, they're essentially one epidemic. We have deterioration of mental health in the United States. And if you look really at the science, what does it show? And these epidemics are our suicide epidemic, epidemics in violent, so shootings, and the opioid epidemic. And I don't have 5 minutes is not the time to talk about this. This is in the peer-reviewed literature. I have a file to submit for the record. But these are facts. These are things that have just been glossed over by the wireless industry. And I really don't have time to talk about them in 5 minutes. I wish I did. But we need to examine our epidemics in the context of our EMF exposures. What does that mean? That means that the CDC tracking these epidemics we need to start measuring how much radiation are people being exposed to. And before we roll out 5G, and this means there are 4 kinds of electromagnetic fields that we know are harmful to human health. So radio frequency radiation, magnetic fields, dirty electricity, and electric fields. Okay, our exposure, any given person, and all humans are affected by EMFs. Our given exposure has nothing to do with the research that my colleagues are going to cite, with the National Toxicology Program. That is an assessment of the risk of one cell phone in the near field, okay? What is our exposure in a day? It's not one cell phone. It's cell phones, it's multiple wireless networks, it's smart meters, it's cell towers. It's this sandwich, and it all adds up. And this is a serious problem for occupational health, public safety, and personal safety. And I feel that it's irresponsible to be even talking about the Internet of Things and rolling out a new untested technology when we're not even measuring what are our current exposures from the current networks.
Doctor, appreciate your testimony. Would you again provide us with your credentials? You said at the beginning.
Yes, I'm an MD. I'm board certified in internal medicine. I've been assistant professor at different medical schools, mostly in New York, most recently the University of Miami. And I got interested in electromagnetic fields after my administrator at the University of Miami gave me a new iPhone. I used it for 20 minutes on speaker, and my finger was burning at the end of the call. So that was years ago. I started reading about the science and connecting with other scientists. And really, my expertise, I've taken care of a lot of patients with chronic disease. So when I talk about diabetes and, for instance, heart failure, that, you know, the National Toxicology Program shows clear evidence of cardiomyopathy in that study. In other words, that's a precursor to congestive heart failure. And I want to just read one thing, if you'll allow me. This is from the United States Renal Data System, healthcare expenditures for persons with chronic kidney disease. So over half of the 2015 Medicare spending for beneficiaries age 65 and older was for those who had diagnoses of CKD, diabetes mellitus, or heart failure. All three of these conditions, when you look as an independent scientist, not someone who's funded by wireless, all of those three conditions are linked. So diabetes and heart failure are linked with EMF exposures. It's very clear.
Doctor, what are your trained medical professional?
Yes.
We don't have one on the panel. What are we to make of the American Cancer Society, for example, telling us there's no evidence of a harmful product?
Well, at this point, there's a national and international 5G appeal. I don't know how many thousands of people have signed. But the point is that many of these organizations have conflicts of interest. And I can't speak to, I don't know who's on their board, who made these decisions. My testimony comes from, I've been reading this literature for years. And really, I got interested in it because I've spent my career taking care of so many patients who were sick in the hospital that when I found out about the links, I was just shocked. I couldn't believe it. So I've read these articles myself, and the experts who don't work for telecom and who are in their independent research, everyone comes to the same conclusion. This isn't, we're not in a place where we should be debating this anymore. This is exactly what happened with tobacco. It's the exact same thing. And really, right now, the only people who are able to protect Americans are our legislators. Because we don't have any relevant regulatory guidelines to protect human health. The FCC guidelines were developed for short-term exposures, 6 minutes, 30 minutes, depending on it's a phone or an outdoor exposure. And they have absolutely no connection to the biological effects that have been very clearly summarized in the Bio Initiative. That's a huge document. Generate all of the summaries are there. I've got it here for you. If anyone wants to read it, I have very concise summaries and abstracts documenting everything that I'm saying. So I know there are plenty of people here that are probably rolling their eyes, but you know, in academic medicine, we have a name for what's happening now with 5G. This is called, you know, 5G is an untested application of a technology that we know is harmful. We know it from the science. This is, in academics, this is called human subjects research. Human subjects research is very tightly regulated. You can't just roll out some type of a research project on human beings unless A, you have their informed consent, so they understand the risks and benefits. And B, you have the approval. Like someone has actually, you know, examined the literature and said, okay, this research project, we believe that it's safe. There's no evidence in the science to indicate that it would not be safe. We have decades of evidence to show that it is not safe.
Thank you, Dr. Goldberg.
Thank you.
And very briefly, if you can, what do you mean by conflict of interest?
I mean that, one of the things that I taught in medical school is evidence-based medicine, so teaching medical students and residents how to critically evaluate the literature, the science. And one of the first things that you teach residents is that you always have to look at the funding. So, and you can read about it. Marcia Engel, the editor of New England Journal, just wrote a great op-ed in the New York Times about researchers who are funded by private industry, the results of their research are much more likely to support whatever it is that is being funded.
Thank you. Representative Garrett has a question.
Yes.
Good morning, doctor. Really quick question. What is the normal RMF that an individual could be exposed to? And if these small cells are installed, what is the prediction of how much RMF the human body would experience? And then the second question would be, if we know that RMF is a issue, do we limit the amount of exposure somebody with cardio issues in the hospitals, whether they're going through a CAT scan or so, are we limiting that because we know that just small cells alone is not the issue?
This goes on, and we have the full clip posted, and tomorrow I'll play part two. But I did say I want to spend a lot of today's program hearing your feedback. I'm going to go to your feedback now. You can give us a call. Our whole line was lit up. 15 callers were hanging, but now I see we only have two, so now's your opportunity to call back in at 888-874-4888 and ask why, if we know where there's a responsible group of scientists and public health advocates and people who've been victimized themselves who are trying to shout out to us that we shouldn't keep listening to the establishment. Why do we do just the opposite? In fact, almost every single story I post about vaccine injury happened after they took the vaccine and they chose not to learn the truth before the vaccines. Now this doctor's talking about the G5, and I'll answer this person's last question here. They're putting thousands of these satellites up. They're going to interconnect with all other satellites. That's extremely dangerous. And the entire country, the entire United States and Canada will be blanketed with electromagnetic pulses. So it doesn't matter where you go, where you live, you're going to be impacted by electromagnetic pulses, as will bees and birds and nature. And that can disrupt natural navigational systems in the brains of creatures. It can also adversely affect our cells. Now, she's talking about a single cell phone overheating in her hand, and we now have thousands of photographs of what the brain looks like 2 minutes after you're on a cell phone. 2 minutes, your whole brain is inflamed. Now, think of the people that live on their cell phones, that put the little gizmo in their ear and carry it around all day long that's beaming to the kids. And we're not expecting an epidemic of brain cancers. We'd be foolish not to expect this. But what if it doesn't go to cancer? What if it goes to learning disabilities by adversely affecting different parts of the brain, like the hippocampus? So, that's what she's yelling. Now, there's over 900,000 physicians in the United States. Why is she only one of about five testifying against this? Because she did her homework. And she was shocked by what she saw. So why aren't the other 99.9% of the physicians shocked? And would you expect anything other than the American Cancer Society or any of these other foundations to come forward and really tell us the full truth on something? I wouldn't be. So Listen carefully. That's a clarion call. She's not a Cassandra. She's telling us the truth, not to scare us, but to inform us. She's saying, in effect, don't play the game that you didn't know, because the tobacco industry mastered that game. The asbestos industry mastered that game. The sugar industry mastered that game. The alcohol industry mastered that game. And now the open source webs like Google, Facebook, and Wikipedia have mastered that game. And every game someone else masters, you're going to lose. And in this case, it could be any number of diseases associated with electromagnetic frequencies. I have a friend that works at a media company. He's paid a lot of money and works a night shift. That takes 10 years off your life. And sits in front of monitors where there's these gigantic antennas with massive amounts of radiation coming in, radio frequency vibrations coming in. And this person wonders why her health is a mess. And yet that person will not change because the money's good. So if I explained, you're taking 20 years off your lifespan, you're 62, you're lucky to be alive. And they just shrug their shoulders and say, but I need that, you know, lifestyle. I need that security. Is that the only job you could do? Is that the only one in the world? And then you start seeing a phenomenon that we do not discuss in our society. And we will not discuss this. This is a conversation we will not have in society. What you gain by making bad choices? Ah, people gain something? You bet they do. In fact, you frequently gain more from a bad choice than you do from the right choice. I'll leave it at that, because I'm going to be doing a whole, in the new year, instead of doing lectures, I did over 100 lectures this past year. I don't announce them because they're always full, but this time I'm going to do them differently. I'm going to do webinars, lectures on different themes. That is going to be an entire three-hour lecture. What do we gain by making wrong choices? Anyhow, we're going to go to our calls now, as promised. And we have Ronald on from Brooklyn. Hi, Ronald. You're on the air.
Hello. Good afternoon, Gary. This is Ron. I was calling to say thank you so much. About 33 years ago, I was diagnosed by the neurologist with multiple sclerosis. And the doctor basically said to me, get my affairs in order. There's nothing I can do for you. And after overcoming that shock, I said, it's time for me to get down and to do it the way that I see fit. And I did some research, and I hooked right up with you about 32, 33 years ago and got on a protocol with you, became a member of the Running and the Walking Club, and I finished the New York City Marathon with you. Thank you very much for that. And that was 15 years after having so-called multiple sclerosis. And what happened, unfortunately, working down at Wall Street, I was standing in front of the South Tower when it collapsed, and I continued to work down at Ground Zero for the next 14 years, and I got lots of toxins in my body, and my immune system is a little bit wanky right now because of that. So I'm just in the process of cleaning out my immune system and trying to get back into that mode where I can run the marathon again at age 60. And
well, we're going to do the marathon. I'm going to do the marathon coming into New York in April to do it, to start the training. So I will give you a new protocol to help detoxify from all the cancer-causing and immunosuppressive agents that were in the dust that they lied to us about and didn't tell us. Remember the lies? Think of how many innocent people were put at risk and have ended up with diseases. The police, the firefighters, the people who were brave, real courage to be down there. Even the people who were taking food down for the first arrivals. I was down there. That's one of those interesting days because I had just returned from Florida from my animal sanctuary ranch that morning early. And I always turn right on Riverside Drive with my brother Steve, and we run up the George Washington Bridge, run across the bridge, and back. It's 10-mile run. And I'd never once run south. And that morning, Steve wasn't available, so I just ran south. And I was right there when that plane came over my shoulder. I says, wow, that plane's too low. And I looked up, and there it was. And so I was down there. And one of the first things I said is there's going to be micro-crystallized concrete and glass, and people are going to breathe that in. And there was a guy came over to me. He identified himself that he was a Secret Service agent, and he listened to the radio show, and he said, this is a mess. And I said, we got to warn people that they were walking up. A whole bunch were walking up the west side. And I said, we got to tell them to run, get out of here. And that's what we were doing. So you were exposed to an enormous amount of micro-crystallized debris, and you could have had any number of carcinogens and toxins in your body. Those are not easily expelled. You can get them out, and I'll give you a protocol to get them out. There was also a firefighter who had COPD from being down there and had to retire, and he came into the Tri-State Healing Center and put him on a very strict protocol. And 2 years later, he went back to work. He got a clean bill of health. So can you reverse from the conditions of environmental, mass environmental acute toxicity? The answer is yes. But you can't do it piecemeal. As you know, when I counseled you, I'm a highly disciplinary person. I expect that discipline from the people. Do you remember that?
You will get that from me.
Okay, good. Then I will get you a protocol. I'm not able to be reached right now because I'm traveling. However, I'll send it over to Luann, be in touch with Luann, and she'll get it to you. And then I expect to see you in much better health in April, and then we'll do the New York City Marathon together. How's that?
Sir, amen to that.
Okay. Nice to talk with you. Let's say hello to Howie, and Howie is from Queens. Hi, Howie. Your turn.
How are you, Gary? I've been listening to you for about 30 years. I think there are four reasons for this. Number one, most Americans, up until they're about 60, they take their health for granted. They feel age will take care of everything. Number two, we're a society of conformity. We don't like to stand out from the crowd. In fact, I've been called a health nut. Number three, Americans don't like to give up what they like. They refuse, and if they do it, they do it piecemeal, like from 7 days to 5 days. And number four, to be healthy, you have to have a lot of discipline, and we are an extremely undisciplined society. I also want to point out, you'll see nothing about this in the paper, but I believe that Ted Kennedy and John McCain both got brain cancer because of their extensive use of the cell phone.
We don't know that that's the case, but it's certainly capable of occurring. I'm not familiar with how often they would use a cell phone, but there are now over 40 studies in the scientific peer-reviewed literature associating brain abnormalities and high inflammatory rates with the use of cell phones, and not just in average people, but it's extremely pernicious in children because they have a not fully developed body and not fully developed brain, not fully developed immune system. And yet now we're even toddlers are using these devices as like a way to keep a child interested in a topic or to teach them, and yet it's still electromagnetic apparatus, and that should never be allowed ever for any children, toddlers. And how much time, and I studied the literature, so how much time would be considered safe to use a cell phone? The answer is 2 minutes per week. Let me repeat that. 120 seconds per week, and most people are using them hours per day. Now, then use your computer, and then use your portable devices, and you're way up there. So I appreciate your insights. Thank you very much for calling in and sharing those with us, Howie from Queens. And thank you for listening for 30 years. Let's say hello. Oh, by the way, Leonard, who is an outstanding chef, gave me a message today that you can hear this program over YouTube. I didn't know that. And evidently, a whole lot of people are listening to this program every day over YouTube. So just another streaming source you can use. Also, for those of you who didn't know, you can call a number and leave a voicemail, and we can then download the voicemail and play it on the air. So if you're not able to call in live at that particular moment, at least your question will get up there and you can download the archive and listen. Here is the voicemail line. You have a question for any host. You want an answer. Call this number and say, my name is such and such, and here is my question. Write this down, please. 862-800-6805. Again, 862-800-6805. You can also use a cell phone much safer by using the one on speaker and keeping it about a foot away from your body. And you can also use the blue tubes. And the blue tubes don't allow the electromagnetic pulses to go up to your ears. So that's the way to listen, at least so you will minimize any danger. So that's that. Before we take this other call, I'm going to take in a second. For those of you who want to hear more information on geoengineering, that information is going to be an hour to 2 hours, however long it takes, tonight, Dane Wigington. Everything about geoengineering, weather modification is a weaponizing it. He's intelligent, he is a scholar, he is well-versed, he is pragmatic and practical. That will be tonight at 7 p.m. live on the Progressive Radio Network. Just go to prn.fm. Also, yesterday we did something interesting. I'm just looking at our numbers that I hadn't looked at yesterday, and because I get a regular rollout of how many people are listening, and we had listening over the Internet on our sister station, WBAI, 642 people listening by the Internet on WBAI. I don't know of any other program that even comes close to that. So thank you for listening over the Internet to our sister station. Let's say hello to Joel from New Jersey. Hi, Joel. I'm going to go through these real quick to try to get you all in.
Just want to do a shout-out to Katie Singer with her book, The Electronic...
The Electronic what?
Katie Singer's book, The Electronic Silent Spring. She was a pioneer in pointing to cell phones and cell towers as giving people brain cancer and stuff. She spoke at the Techno Utopia Conference about 3 years ago in New York. She's from Santa Fe. Anyway,
Joe, how about doing this? I'm always excited to hear from someone new in a field. Could you please email that to R. Gale, Richard Gale, at GaryNall.com, and give him the contact information on her, and we'll invite her on the program as a guest. All right? Now, your comments, please.
My comment, yeah, three things. One, habit. People love their meat. They love their Coca-Cola, whatever. Two, fear of unconventionality. My father is one of these guys. People are afraid to do something that's unconventional. And those are the deep ones. And then the surface one are the reasons they give, which could be any number of them. I have a pretty educated friend who, when I told him I was following you and taking my black cumin seed oil and my curcumin and everything, I take 29 supplements a day and drink a wonderful smoothie. I'll be happy to share it with everyone. He said, oh, Gary Null. And then he said something very insulting about you that if you want me to, you know, it's not dirty, but if you want me to tell you, I will. I was astonished. You've saved more lives than most MDs.
Don't be offended by people who are offended by me. I don't hold it against them. I'm not angry with them. You don't hear me every day on the air trying to defend myself against their attacks and accusations, because they're coming from all that they know. And they're probably well-intentioned. But the fact that the people who conditioned them, where they got their information, if it was Wikipedia, if it was the Quack Watch, these are people who have an agenda. And as you will hear this Thursday, that agenda is being challenged. So what you might want to do is take the articles, the 15 articles that I have written in response to being a pillared on Wikipedia. They put me up there. I didn't. And the person who put me up there was Stephen Barrett. This man's been totally discredited, including by courts in California. In any case, we launch our challenge to Jimmy Wales and Wikipedia this Thursday. I will even be reading you my lawyer's letters to their lawyers, and we're suggesting lawyer up. It's time. So it's important that maybe you encourage your friend to listen to how we methodically deconstruct their arguments and then put the spotlight on them. Who's behind these people? Is it the pharmaceutical industry, the sugar industry? There's no shortage of people that I've challenged, and whole industries that they would feel comfort if I was taken off the air or discredited. But I'm still here, and we're not looking back, and we're still helping people. So it's not important how many people I help. Look, I don't know if anyone else is cured, C-U-R-E-D, cured people with full-blown AIDS. No one else I know of in the entire world has ever done that. And yet, instead of being thanked, except from the people who benefited, it's attacked. And that's something you have to stop and think about for a moment. But it didn't stop me from helping 1,200 more people. And it didn't stop me from writing about the politics of those who profit off of plagues like AIDS. So when you open a door that had been locked and sealed, when you break the locks and you open it up and the day opens with light shining on the corruption and the self-serving and the venality of these groups and individuals, they're going to respond. And then they're going to tell everyone they know, and your friend is just probably one of those people who got that information. So don't hold that against them. Better days are coming. And to Peter and James and Sandy, I will be taking your calls tomorrow. Please call in tomorrow. I'll make sure that our engineer puts you up first so you all get on. Okay, Sandy from New York? So we'll look forward to hearing from you tomorrow. From all of you, thank you for listening. And boy, do we have a blistering program tonight. We're going to make a lot of enemies with it. But it's a good thing. Remember, in life, if someone who opposes you because you revealed weaknesses in their ideology or their beliefs that is devastating or destructive to the world, to animals, to humans, to cultures, to ethnicities, to religions, and to people's human rights, then that's an enemy worth making. Thank you all for listening, and have a good day.